disruption zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
It's the Disruption Zone, and I've been flying solo lately because Cameron Mills, my co-host, has been busy, but today he deigned to take a little time to hang with us. What up, dude? Glad you're back.
First of all, that's nonsense. You have carried on with the Disruption Zone without my knowledge. I keep getting emails from people about all the posts you're doing. The numbers have skyrocketed. Numbers I noticed skyrocketed when I wasn't on. I started getting jealous. So, look, that's not doing me working hard. It's the fact that I want to be a part of this now.
Maybe it was you. Maybe you were the problem.
Is that not exactly the text or email I sent to you?
Joking.
Because I get the email. Because we both get the data of our numbers, our download numbers. And all of a sudden they're skyrocketing. And I'm like, dude, maybe I was the problem.
I'm joking. All right. We wanted to do a bit about the halftime show of the Super Bowl this last weekend. So this is the big controversy. There's a lot of people talking about how there was a stripper pole, and
that seemed to be used as a stripper pole.
Exactly, it was definitely a stripper pole dance.
Yeah, it wasn't a flagpole.
Yeah, Shakira and J-Lo. On one hand, half of America thought it was just phenomenal. 50-year-old women, frankly, just rocking it. You know what I mean? Hey, that's great. On the other hand, there's a lot of people that are saying, "What the H-E double hockey sticks? That was the most hypersexualized halftime show that I've ever seen." Where do you fall on this spectrum?
Well, number one, I fall all over the place on this spectrum, which is going to be hard to come to an opinion, but I do have one. I go back to the Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson thing and think about that.
The nipple.
Now that involved nudity, and I can't think of anything or some level of nudity. Nothing the other night did I see anything that was reminded me or was could be conveyed or construed as nudity.
Well, hold on. Are you in the camp as I am that incident was purposeful? The Justin Timberlake and the nipple that was purposeful?
Oh yeah. Okay. That was an accident. Oh yeah. Okay. Oh no. Oh, that's right, because there was talk saying that was
they said it was an accident. Yeah, wardrobe. And it was clearly planned. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, look, so then so let's take that in consideration and say that was planned. If that was planned, it was planned to do what? What was the purpose? The purpose was
titillate.
To draw a reaction.
Titillate.
Yes, exactly. To draw a reaction. So then why wouldn't what happened Sunday night be the exact same thing? It is on some level. Look, it's entertainment, right?
Correct.
It's entertainment. The purpose on some level is to entertain, whether that's to titillate sexually, whether that's to, make the hairs on the back of your neck stand up because some singer just hits a note that you can't believe or plays one of your favorite songs. Or, I go back to the Prince production when Purple Rain, he starts playing Purple Rain and it literally starts raining. I think it was in Miami. I mean, there were so many moments of this, going back in history of the Super Bowl halftime show. But here's the place I was. I was literally doing my radio show, which everyone can download at CameronMillsRadio.com. I was in the middle of my show as the Super Bowl was going on. We knew we probably didn't have many listeners. Most people were, I'm sure, watching the show. But I'm kind of giving updates on the game for those who were listening. And then the halftime show comes on. And I had actually forgotten. I think I remember J-Lo was going to be a part of it. Forgotten Shakira. But we're just watching it. And to be perfectly honest, and I want to be completely forthright here, I didn't catch all of it. I didn't hear a word of lyrics. You mentioned something earlier about
there was a veiled rake at Trump with a bunch of little kids sitting in cages all across the field.
Right. And I didn't see that at all.
I mean, whatever.
But what stood out to me is what you said earlier. It was this to me, and I think there's a lot on Twitter and social media going on and I've seen some very great tweets, like from some people saying, look, because it really does kind of land 50-50, it seems like, in America. I did a poll on my Twitter account during the show saying, halftime, Super Bowl halftime show, yes, liked it or no. It literally got 700 votes, literally landed 50-50.
Wow.
It was 100% 50-50. And I'm kind of, and then I started reading some of the responses, and the responses seem, a lot of them seem to be coming from some parents who were surprised that, you know, because their kids are watching and they, you know, had to take their kids out of the room. Then there were some that said they knew this should, they shouldn't take a chance on this. So they didn't have their kids in the room. So they knew what it was going to be. I got to be honest, because I go back to the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake thing and the fallout that came from that. I was kind of surprised. I was kind of surprised at how, to me, and I want to be clear, to me, without lyrics, without music, just watching how hypersexualized it was, because I feel like it was. I told you earlier, especially on the heels of what happened at Kansas University's Midnight Madness, or whatever they call it, their first practice of the year, where Snoop Dogg was there, and there were, I mean, it was almost, I mean, it wasn't even hidden. It was, Snoop Dogg was rapping. Okay, that's fine. I don't know what kind of language he used, but there were definitely strippers on the court. I mean, and they weren't.
Was that a veiled reference to another school? Were they taking a slap at another school that might be just down the road or something? I mean, I don't know.
That's an interesting thought, Leland. I hadn't considered that. But I would say this, if that was a veiled reference at another school, it's a pretty dumb reference to make.
Given Kansas's trouble.
Yeah, that school didn't come off too well,
right?
Because of that issue. And I, if I were an administrator at Kansas, I would kind of steer as clear from that as I could. And right. That's where I go back to the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl had, there was so much negativity after the Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson thing. There was so much that the Super Bowl even kind of made a point the next year. I don't remember who the performer was, but
it was generic. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. It was a great performer, but it was very purposefully bland from a sexualization point
right.
of view.
Right. It was like some old country singer that they knew wasn't going to offend anybody by singing about mamas and dead trucks and stuff.
Right. Well, and then think about this. So they made the decision to do that. And then they kind of, you know, I don't know what they've done over the last few years. I can't remember that well. I know last year, I think it was Maroon 5. I didn't even see a second of that.
Yeah.
I had someone remind me though, when I was talking to them about this Super Bowl halftime show, they said, well, what about Maroon 5 last year and Adam Levine? Well, I don't know. Maybe he took his shirt off. He probably did.
Yeah, I think okay. He did. I think somebody went shirtless for a minute and everybody was like, look, here's where I come down on this, dude. Honestly, I don't care. Right. Like I watched it. It's hypersexualized. Okay. Yeah. And any parent who says, well, I was surprised. My kids, what? If you don't think there's not going to be sexually hypersexualized stuff in the biggest sporting event of the year, the biggest ad vehicle in the year, then come on. You're not, the only place you're going to see it is not going to be the frickin' halftime show. That's number one. But let me finish my point, because I think this is important. Here's where I have an issue with it. You know, and I don't mean to sound like the old man who says, hey, you kids, get off my lawn.
But I'm going to
for a second. There was a time when the halftime Super Bowl show was just that. It was something to fill time between the two highlights that everybody was there for. So they got some, and I used to be on the church drama team, and they called it tootling. They called it tootling. In between skits, right? You'd come out and you'd do a skit, and then you'd tootle.
During the stage.
There'd be a little bit of music. Change. Yeah, just a little bit of music. They tootle in between singing one song and getting the offering while they're getting the offering, and then they do the next song. They tootle in between it, right? It was tootling. Yep. It was just to give you 20 minutes of something to watch. And it was usually just something that the vast majority of people would thoroughly enjoy. It was some big act. Now it's become a combination of, let me show you my ass, and let me also make a political statement against half the audience that's watching. And that's what it is, it seems like, year after year. Here's the one thing. Again, I don't care. I'm not offended by it. You want to do a stripper pole at halftime, do a stripper pole. Whatever. You're 50 years old. You got a good body. Show it off. Whatever. What I'm offended by is the fact that we have this whole Me Too movement that's developed, where every time we turn around, they're telling us, don't hypersexualize women. And then this right here is women choosing to hypersexualize themselves. So it's like, which is it? That's where I have a problem.
Well, and you're, I think you're right, Leland. I think that's the point, is that there's, because I think, and that's where what was interesting to me about what apparently was, based on my poll, and my poll means, you know, certainly not representative of the entire country. It just was interesting to me. But based on a lot of what I'm hearing, based on a lot of what I've seen on social media, it just seemed, it really did seem to break down. I wouldn't even say along political lines, because I don't know that, but it just seemed to break down on a 50-50 line. And that kind of was what I was hearing from a lot of women, because they're the ones I kind of wanted to hear from on this. Okay, yeah, where did you land? Because the men, look, let's be honest about us.
Who cares what we think?
We weren't going to be offended because we were greatly entertained. Exactly. We could have been or we weren't. Right?
I have no issues looking at J-Lo in a skimpy outfit. I have no issues.
And the bottom
that.
Line is, and let's be clear here, Leland, as two Christian brothers, we should have averted our eyes.
Probably.
I know for a fact we didn't. Or at least I know I did. Right?
Probably.
Now, and I did find it hypersexualized. There was a part in my spirit that got a check that, like, man, they're not being very subtle about, you know, what they're doing. Maybe what they're singing they are, but what they're doing. But what's interesting to me is that leave the dancing and that part to the side. You know, you said there was a veiled slap at Trump, right? Now, right. I didn't see that. Yep. Okay. But let's say that, and you know, I believe that clearly was there. That's what's interesting to me, because what I remember, going back to Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, is that the thing the NFL said was, we had no idea. We did not know this was going to happen. So they tried to kind of distance themselves, saying, you know, we're going to make sure we watch the rehearsals going forward. We're going to make sure we know what kind of product we're putting out there.
Right.
Have they stopped doing that?
No, there was a bunch of ads that they turned down. They turned down the pro-life ad this year. So they're definitely checking for what might be offensive to some people.
To some.
But not others.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Well, and here's the other thing, because you mentioned the, you know, again, the political part of it, or this hypersexualized part of it, because again, that's for, I'm sure that's for more than just men. Some women might have enjoyed that as well. But I think about the advertisements, okay? Because you said this is a great advertising moment. It's the most watched television program of the year. And the Super Bowl halftime show has become part of the Super Bowl. It just has. So because I hear from many people who say, men and women who say they really only tune in for the Super Bowl halftime show. Now, that's not most of America, but that's much that there are more people than I realized did that.
Right.
But if the hypersexualized part of it, if that was there to draw people in, to keep people there, to keep people entertained, well, I watched a lot of the commercials. The commercials are the actual advertisement, other than the NFL advertising itself. The commercials are the actual advertisement. What was it? $5 million for a 30-second ad this year, I think.
Yeah.
On national television.
Right.
I don't remember a single commercial in any way, shape, or form being close to as sexualized as the halftime show.
Right. Not and this year.
Sells,
in years past, they have
sells,
been. But
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so then that leads to the question, why not? Was it because the NFL shut those down, maybe like they did the pro-life ad?
Right.
Or was it because the advertisers are, because I think they are, the advertisers are very much into a, you know, a community, we all feel good, let's, you know, unity, all this together, a lot of them. I mean, look at the Budweiser ad. The Budweiser ad, to me, was one of the best ads they have ever done, one of the best Super Bowl ads I've ever seen, a typical Americans. And I have a hard time believing there was anybody on the left or the right who had a problem with that ad. They showed protest. I couldn't quickly read the signs as to what that massive protest they showed in the middle of that commercial was protesting. But they showed, you know, my favorite part was the typical Americans showing up unannounced. And the visualization was a guy coming back from either Iraq or Afghanistan overseas, a military man, embracing his father as a surprise.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love that commercial. That commercial came out about 2 weeks ago and I wept. And I just sit here thinking, okay, look, there are people out there, there are acts out there that could, and I'm not talking about a generic one. I don't want a bland Super Bowl halftime show.
There's acts that could bring us together that would, that they don't have to be
YouTube
bland.
You did that.
Yeah,
you
yes.
Remember when YouTube did
yeah,
it right
oh,
after
yeah,
9/11?
With all the names and everything. After
all the names and Bono opening his jacket and it being an American flag. And
isn't that harder, though, at a time when we are so divided? We weren't divided at that time. After 9/11,
everybody
had American flag stickers on their cars. Now only Republicans do.
That's a great point. Yeah. Now at the time, it's almost, you know, for some people, it's we hate our country. For some people, we love our country. Maybe that's still why I still find it hard to believe anyone would hate that typical Americans commercial about Budweiser.
Right. Right. Well,
So I'll end by saying this, because I don't care either. I get to the point where, look, this is kind of where we are in our country. It was for entertainment. It certainly elicited a response.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much it helped J-Lo's sales or Shakira's sales. I assume that's part, if not at least 50% of what their goal was, is to up their sales to get, you know, for their branding. I will end by saying this. The only part that I thought was, and I do love Shakira. I like her music. But the jumping kick into the camera at the end of her opening set, I almost fell out of my chair during the radio show. It was, she tried. I'm going to give her credit. She tried. And Leland, I couldn't have done one more athletic than her at this point in my life. But it was so like half sold out too and awkward that even Hunter, who was producing my show on the other end of the control room, he stopped. He interrupted me. He said, "What was that?" And I saw it at the same time. I thought, that was embarrassing is what it was. But I have been in those moments before, so where I tried to do something athletic.
That's hilarious. All right, well, let me throw this at you real quick, because this goes back to, I guess, the discussion about what is allowed in a genre like this. And on one hand, you know, we this drives to the heart of what you were saying. On one hand, we have the NFL breathlessly going through line by line each of the commercials to make sure there's nothing unwoke in there,
right?
So that
right.
they can virtue signal by canceling said commercial. And on the other hand, we have a stripper pole and striptease act at halftime with a veiled negative reference to the president. Okay, fine. When I was in college and I took a class called Media and Society, it was a required class for the communication arts program. And in that
and
class,
by the way, let me add this, Leland. You went to a school, a college that is well known nationally for its media training.
Yes, Asbury University.
I want to make sure people understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great school for that. And if you have a kid that's wanting to get into media, I highly recommend it. Their reputation is nationally known, not just as a Christian university, but nationally known to media.
Asbury University, yep.
So in the class, Media and Society, required class, the teacher gets up and he asks a question, and this is of all the students. And he says to everybody, he says, "Is media a reflection of society or is society a reflection of media?" And the idea was to debate for a full hour. We debated. We went back and forth. And I kind of hung back. And at the end of the class, I raised my hand. And, you know, everybody divided into two camps. Well,
I can imagine.
Media is shoveling us stuff we don't want on one side. And the other side is, no, media is giving us what we want. And I raised my hand and I said, it's both. And he said, explain. Yeah. And I said, well, on one hand, the media is pushing us little by little to accept more. Because more is salacious, more is attention getting, more is controversial, and it grabs our attention. But on the other hand, the media doesn't go so far that we reject it outright. And essentially, it's a combination of both. So when we go back to what you were saying, okay, on one hand, we have the NFL going through the commercials, trying to figure out which ones are offensive. And on the other hand, we have a stripper act at halftime. Right. That dichotomy is a reflection of society, perhaps just one or two steps ahead of us. Does that make sense? So we're watching ourselves.
Yes. No, that's great. Here's the problem, and I believe you're absolutely 100% correct. Here's the issue, is that, and I'm going to take this back to a little bit of Christian church history, which I used to think possibly could be the most boring subject in the history of the world. Once I studied it, I found it to be the most fascinating history. Or fascinating subject I could possibly study. As a believer, maybe as an unbeliever, I don't know, but as a believer, church history to me, because there was one thing that I remember above all else in studying church history, is that 2,000 years ago, when you know, the Bible was written, the doctrine was written, the Christian Christian faith on some level was written down, right? Other than the Old Testament, which had already been. If you took something in the Bible that was not doctrine, that was not seen as orthodox, right? Mm-hmm. And you slightly changed it 2,000 years ago. Think of it this way. Think of you and I like to shoot guns, right?
Right.
So if you and I put a target 3 yards from us, aim for center point, chances are you and I are going to get close to the bullseye. Maybe not hit it, but we're going to get close, right? We're going to have a good grouping. You put that thing 20 yards from us, we may not even hit the paper.
Right. Speak to yourself, but yeah.
Thank you. So if you get off a little bit from what is good, okay. So in biblical theology and in church history, I think of what is truth.
Yeah.
If you slightly divert from what is truth 2,000 years ago, how far are you from that truth now?
Right.
2,000 years later. So it's the same thing here. If you get off from what is good, what is wholesome, what is pure, what is right, what is holy, and those are very biblical words that can also be used in our day and age in non-biblical means. But if you get off from that, just look, where were we 100 years ago? Now, you could say, maybe we were prudes. Maybe we took it too seriously when it comes to hypersexualization. Okay. But when you look at where we were then and where we are now, it's this slow kind of diversion of what we should see, what would be okay and what is not. And right. I will admit, there are some people who believe differently than I do that there's nothing wrong with that, what happened Friday night.
Right.
Or excuse me, Sunday night. There's nothing. You're being a prude, Cameron, if you found that offensive. I didn't find it offensive. I found it interesting from the sense of, no, first of all, I found it sexual. I'm a man. I'm a 44-year-old man. I found it sexual, but I also found it interesting because I thought, man, the NFL themselves, you know, when the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake thing happened, they went, I mean, they protected and protected and protected and protected themselves. We didn't know. We didn't know. We didn't know. I don't know that they're doing that.
Well,
right now.
They can't, because again, it goes back to that weird. First of all, they're billing this as the first ever Latina halftime show in history,
which is awesome.
Well, it's awesome, but it's also like, what? I didn't know there was a category for that. I mean, I thought the halftime show was just an act. I wasn't sitting. How many people were sitting here waiting, going, you know, the halftime show is great, but there's never been Latinas doing it. I mean, yeah. No, it's just like that. That's why they can't touch it. Because it's been set up as one of these things that's now a historical first, so now the NFL can't touch it. They can't criticize
You say the first, what did you say was set up as the first?
It's
Latina
being set up by the media is talking about it. Oh, it's the first ever Latina halftime show, because the only people keeping count of which groups of people are involved in this is the media, not the rest of us.
All right, fine. So I've got two questions about that, though. Okay. And it's neither here nor there, but did Gloria Estefan not perform at
a
Super Bowl halftime
thank
show?
You.
Is she not Latino?
She may
have been born in America. I honestly don't know her backstory.
That doesn't matter. In today's world, with the short attention spans and lack of historical context of millennials, if it didn't happen before 10 years ago, it never happened.
So that's the thing then. And now if that's the truth, if that's how they're billing it, now that does make me angry because, if they're billing it as the first all-Latino halftime show, are they saying Gloria Estefan is not Latina?
She's Cuban American.
Well, okay. Well, then what? And then now we get back to what qualifies.
But I don't know. I'm
Latina.
Trying to find out if she did.
I'm almost positive she performed at a Super Bowl halftime show in the 80s, because clearly that's when she was at her height.
Yeah, I was going to say if you Google it, she's all over the news reacting to J-Lo and Shakira.
What does she say? This ought to be good. You got a quote or anything?
I was just pulling it up to see if she had done this. I'm trying to figure out if we were right about her doing it. Yeah, 1992.
Bam. 1992.
Yeah, 1992. So, Gloria Estefan, Brian Boitano, and Dorothy Hamill.
Okay, so granted, Dorothy Hamill was probably, I don't think Hamill is a Latina name. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But maybe it's not the first all Latino, and maybe that is a big deal for our Latino Americans. Maybe it is, but let's put it this way: if people can find pride in that, then God bless them. Find pride in that. I think that's awesome.
Well, I'm not. Hold on, let me make sure it's clear. I'm not knocking pride in it. That's
no,
not
I know
point.
You're not. I know you're
my
not.
Point in bringing that up was that. Like
media.
I think the media categorizes people into groups, and then they set, you know, oh, it's like, for me, it's like, if you're an American, I don't care what your race is. I don't care what your background. Yeah. I don't care where you were born. I just care that we're all here and you're talented. Let's get up there and have a show. And that's great. But I was saying that in response to your point about how the NFL protected their brand after the Timberlake thing. They can't do anything now if the media is setting this up as being, well, it's the first. You can't criticize them because because that's the world we live in now.
Yeah, you're right. Well, look, I to me, it's just one of those things where, to go back to your question about the media, because I do love that question. I love that professor who asked that question, because I think that's one of the most important questions we need to be looking at as a human being.
Dr. Jim Owens,
right now.
By the way, that was Dr. Jim Owens. He's awesome.
That is a important question we all need to be asking ourselves personally, because you and I have talked about this privately, not privately, but, you know, off air, so to speak, where, you know, I'll speak for myself because I think I know where you stand on this, but I'll just speak for myself. My contempt for media is at its highest. I mean, I do not believe anything I'm told on Fox News, on CNN, on MSNBC, on radio. I mean, the only news I tend to believe is local news.
Right.
Because I tend to believe the local news has far less of an agenda, you know, like individual reporters might, but I tend to believe the local news has far less of an agenda. The national news media first of all, they've got this 24-hour cycle where they've got to constantly be coming up with things that really aren't news. And second of all, I believe they have an agenda. I believe Fox News has one.
Yep.
I believe CNN has one. And as a result, I don't believe anything they tell me, period, end of story. So I have to do my own research. And which means I might get a little piece of this information on this side. I might get a little piece over here. But the problem is that we have become, myself included to some extent, lazy when it comes to just believing everything we're told. If it's on Twitter, it's true. If someone says something, it's true. And it's just, it puts us in danger because we start to repeat it without ever verifying that.
Yeah.
And Dick Gabriel taught me this a long time ago because I got in a bad habit of reading headlines of articles and basing what the headline said, that's what the article is about. And that's dangerous because he proved to me several times, no, you have to read the article because headlines are intended to grab attention and to, again, back to what we were talking about earlier, to titillate.
Right.
They're there to get you to into the story. But if you base it off the headline, you're not going to get accurate information. Yeah. And I'm convinced the more
I used to do a column for a regular column for the Herald Leader. And I used to get angry because I would write a great headline that was pertinent to the column. And then it would get to they would always change the headline. Some editor whose job it was to write headlines. And it would either sensationalize what I said, mischaracterize what I said,
make
what I said look stupid, or just completely be wrong. I used to get so furious with that because I was like, "That's not what I wrote, you idiot."
Well, then let me ask a question: Why aren't you responsible for writing your own headlines?
I guess because the job of the editor would be threatened if he didn't write headlines or something. I don't know.
It seems to me the job of the editor would be to make sure you had your commas, your periods, your spaces, your I's dotted,
you would think,
your T's crossed.
I think the job of the editor was exactly that, though. Let's find the most titillating thing, even if we have to warp it and pull it out of context. But back to your point about the local media is less biased because it's closer to the people. It's the same reason why you get more response from your state representative than you do from your U.S. senator. Because you can't run it. Well, I shouldn't say this because people actually do. Mitch McConnell actually does go to Chick-fil-A and get breakfast sometimes. He was seen at a local McDonald's. But by and large, if you want a meeting with Mitch McConnell, you can't get one. But you can get one with your state senator.
Yes,
he was seen at McDonald's.
I love your sentence. He goes, Mitch McConnell will go to Chick-fil-A. He was seen at McDonald's recently. I'll push back on you a little bit.
Okay.
Yes, you can get – look, so in 2000 – not long after Obama was elected, when he started pushing for the Affordable Care Act, part of the way they paid for the Affordable Care Act was they cut – all of the Medicare beneficiaries, which I work for one in home health. They cut doctors' reimbursements for Medicare, hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, home health, DME, pharma. Everybody got cut.
Yep.
Because home health is one of the smallest beneficiaries. Actually, it is the smallest beneficiary to Medicare, maybe with the exception of hospice. We got cut the most. We were the smallest. We took the smallest amount from Medicare total. But they cut us the most because we had the smallest lobby, basically. We had the least power when it came to getting to our representatives. So as a result, we started a grassroots thing to specifically get to all of our representatives in each state. And I will say this. We have eight of them, right? We got six representatives and two senators. All eight of the representatives in my state, okay, all eight of them were not only open to hearing what we had to say. Now, we had to go through layer after layer after layer. It wasn't easy, but we got to them and we got audiences with each of them, including McConnell, including at the time Senator Bunning. We got to them. I mean, we got to sit in front of them. So I agree completely. It's much easier.
I'm just making the point that the local media will be less biased because if they say something too controversial, they'll hear it a lot more than CNN will hear it. CNN gets up there with Don Lemon and makes fun of the Trump supporters, and they make fun of them as redneck hicks, and there's this massive outcry, but they don't really hear it. They don't hear it because it's not their audience. Versus if it's the Herald Leader and they say something too outrageous, that columnist will get fired, or that reporter will get fired, or whatever.
Happened,
but I'm trying to agree with you.
Yeah.
I'm trying to they're still biased, but they tend to be less biased, and that's why.
No, you're right, and I get it. I was kind of getting distracted there when you said Herald Leader will fire someone. I thought I don't remember the last time Hillary.
It's happened a couple times. It has happened a couple of times. But anyway, the larger point that we're making is you can't believe necessarily the media all the time because they have an agenda. And the bigger the media is, again, going back to your analogy about farther away from the target, if the target is us, the people, the bigger the media is, the farther they are from the target, the less in touch they are with it, the more likely their agenda, they're going to present it as truth and not hear any kickback on it. And that's for real. But that folds all back into our debate about media and society, which reflects which. And there's this tug and pull that's going on with society. And let's bring this back to our original conversation about the whole halftime show. Yeah. I guess I really like what you were saying about from a Christian perspective, how do we operate in this world? How do we operate in this? Because on one hand, Christians look really stupid when they're running around putting up on Facebook about what a prude they are and how offended they are about all this stuff. And it's like, really? I mean, do you also turn off? I give you a perfect example. I have a family member who is very, very strict on this issue.
Okay. And I do too. She's my mother.
We'd have them over and we'd be watching. And my wife and I are not real prudish about TV. I mean, I don't care if there's nudity in a movie. Yeah. I'm not going to seek out a movie for nudity. Right. And if it has it in there gratuitously, I'm not going to watch it. But if there's a scene in there that's part of the context, I'm like, whatever. I'm not going to freak out. I don't go looking for it, but I'm not going to freak out about it. I just move on. If there's cuss words in there, I'm like, well, that's real life, whatever. But we'd be watching a movie that's we thought relatively calm, and every time there was like a slight cuss word, there'd be a, you know, and it's like it became we just can't watch movies with you guys. I'm sorry if this offends you that much. We don't want to watch it.
Oh, I got you. You're from your family member.
Right. But then they go, one time we were talking about movies, and they said, you got to watch this movie. And we're like, oh, really? And they're like, we have it if you want to borrow it. So they loan it to us, and it's Patriot Games. And it's a great movie, but there's scene in there where a guy's getting a straight up, you know, she's doing some stuff to him and you see a lot of things. And my wife and I just look at each other and we're like, that's their favorite movie. There was an incongruent moment there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is kind of going back to the original point, how do we as Christians function in a world where on one hand we look like we're like clamming up and everybody laughs at us. And on the other hand, this is a reflection of society, and it's a reflection of, you mentioned 100 years ago, things weren't necessarily better all around 100 years ago, but the family unit was intact 100 years ago, and it's not now.
Well,
how do we function in this situation?
Well, so here's where I'll fall on that then, because I can only think personally, because you bring up some good points with the movies, and I immediately think of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I love Game of Thrones. I struggled with Game of Thrones because I felt there was too much gratuitous sex. And look, this is just me. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm saying for me and my faith and the check in my spirit that I got with some, because look, I've sat through a sex scene before in a movie and didn't necessarily get a check in my spirit. Now to me, that's a personal thing where, you know what, if I'm walking closer with the Lord, I bet I would have.
Right.
You know, but there are times when I haven't. But Game of Thrones specifically, it got to be so much, not just hypersexualization, but it was so violent. And so I got kind of these, I don't know how to describe it, Leland, but it's just that to me, it's a spiritual check. It's the Holy Spirit saying, ugh. Right. And so it's either it was over the gratuitous sex in Game of Thrones. It was over the violence in Game of Thrones, both of which I felt were over the top because I felt the writing was so good. The story was so good. If they'd left half of it out, it would have been so much more palatable to me personally.
Right.
So to me, it's I have to sit down as a person in my faith as a Christian and say, OK, the halftime show. Did it get to the point where I needed to, as a man of God, turn away? Okay. Did I need to, was that, if I do need to turn away, then turn away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key is that yes, our society is going to go the way our society is going to go. And I do believe we as Christians need to fight for what we believe is right or wrong, but I also believe we have to be consistent in that fight.
Yeah.
And so that's where, you know, that's why when I was growing up, remember Flanders from The Simpsons?
Yes.
Okay. Flanders was always mocked and made fun of in the realm of The Simpsons, right?
Right. Right.
Well, as I got older and I started watching Simpsons and watching how Flanders, I kind of sat there and thought, you know what? They're making fun of Flanders as a Christian. They're making fun of Flanders because he's a left-hander too, for whatever reason. But I kind of felt personally as a Christian, you know, I deserve this ridicule because I'm not as consistent in my faith and my walk as I should be to the world. And when the world sees Christians or people who claim to be followers of Christ, when they see us be inconsistent, then that gives them absolutely truthful, fair ammunition to say you're not living up to the standards you claim to live up to. And that's fair because even though we are fallen and we are sinful, we are to live. The Bible tells us in three different places that I can think of right now, we are to live, be holy as he is holy. That's difficult. And that, to bring us full circle back to that show, I found it hypersexualized. I did. But did I look away? Well, I did during commercial. I did when I wasn't doing commercial breaks, when I was doing my radio show.
Right.
And I did. I will say, I'll end it by saying this. To me, the most entertaining part was Shakira's high kick right to the camera. That was the best part. It wasn't sexualized. Yeah. It was just unathletic. And I immediately thought, I don't think I could have done any better at this point in my life.
Yeah. I'll just add to that by saying, I think, again, coming full circle, we were talking about the virtue signaling that we saw with the NFL and with the halftime show. Christians virtue signal too, and I think that's what you're getting at.
It's true.
When Christians are bragging about how they think it's we weren't bragging about hypersexuality, but I've seen people on social media bragging.
We're taking it personally. I'm looking at it personally.
But I've seen people on social media like sort of using it as a badge of honor to talk about how.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is kind of the point. We're doing the opposite. I mean, the same thing happens whenever a Starbucks comes out with their coffee cups at Christmas and they're not Christmas enough. And then you have the virtue signaling people that are like, oh, it's not Christmas. They're taking Jesus out of life. You know, we just need to. I think this brings us back to your point. As Christians, we need to live our lives, and we need to seek, as you pointed out, to be as consistent as possible.
Yes.
To be as introspective as possible and honest and intellectually honest with ourselves about our own flaws as possible.
Yep.
And then be less judgmental, but at the same time, I've always thought if we live our lives differently, if your family, you know, it's actually rare today to have a complete family unit. That should attract people's attention. Be dedicated to your wife. Oh. Be dedicated to your children. Be dedicated to your family and to your God. And then people will ask you questions. How do you do that? That's where we went.
And I think, and that it's off topic, but I think you're exactly right. I mean, it's not really off topic. It's on topic, but just slight deviation. To me, more than anything, I think that's the biggest. I two things. I think the media and its agenda, both sides, the right agenda, the left agenda, the media's agenda is a problem because we tend to believe it without thinking. But I also think more than anything, a big solution to in our country is the rebuilding of the family unit. Mm-hmm. That is one of the biggest things. And this has nothing to do with race because it's white families, it's black families, it's mixed families, it's Latina families, it's Asian. I mean, the family unit rebuilt solves a great deal. And look, I'm going to say this without any education. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are people in mental health circles who would vastly disagree with me. But I sit there and think of, you know, the mental health issues we're having. You know, the family unit can not, even if you have a mental health issue, the family unit can help with that. I've heard stories in California of, you know, people trying to help family members that are on the streets in California right now, living on the streets homeless, who want to bring them into their family and help them get help. And there's like laws or something out there that won't allow that, or that because they're free to live however they want, which I guess is fine. But at the same time, families are that's the first line of defense in every issue I think we have today.
I agree wholeheartedly. I couldn't agree more. If you want to stop a lot of the problems in society, rebuild the family unit. And now the family unit is mocked. It's portrayed in the media as the fat slob husband and the wife that has to do all the work and raise the kids and the guys just waiting to watch the next Super Bowl halftime show with Shakira dancing on a stripper pole and J-Lo. So there you go. We brought it full circle. Yeah. Before we end this though, circle on the stripper pole. Before we end this, we got to talk about your latest big project, which is awesome.
Thank you.
Your documentary, Reggie Warford, Fight of His Life. It's really moving, and people can get a copy of this. Tell me what led you to do this piece, to do this documentary. It's one of a series that you've done, and they're all great.
Mm-hmm. Well, so two things led me to do it. Number one, I'm a Kentucky boy. I grew up idolizing the Kentucky Wildcats. I got to live out my dream and be a Kentucky Wildcat during some very good years in the 90s. I walked away with two national championship rings. And I did not know the story of Reggie Warford. And when Dick Gabriel, who's been my longtime media mentor and a longtime friend, came to me after we did our last two documentaries together. And the last two documentaries were things that I was intimately involved in personally, the 96 championship and the 98 Kentucky championship. So those two documentaries, The Team and Out of the Blue, tell that story, or those two stories. Then we were looking for our third documentary because these have all been successful. They've all been award-winning. The Out of the Blue got nominated for an Emmy 2 years ago.
Wow,
so we're
awesome.
Like, all right, what's our next one? We got to do next one. Well, I'm out of championships at this point. So we're looking for something. And I turned to Dick, and Dick said, Reggie Warford, that's a story that needs to be told. And I stupidly and ignorantly sit there and say, who's Reggie Warford? So, and I feel so guilty about that now that I know. And so we did the documentary because if you're a Kentucky basketball fan and Kentucky basketball matters to you, then you need to know two people in particular when it comes to what happened to with Kentucky basketball in the 60s and 70s. Because during the civil rights era, during integration of high schools, of middle schools, of bathrooms, when all that started happening, the result for Kentucky basketball was we got our first two African-Americans over the course of two different periods of time, both very close together, but still two different periods of time. Tom Payne was the first African-American to take a scholarship at the University of Kentucky offered by Adolph Rupp. Tom was here 1 year and then left for the NBA. Okay, so he was here. He was the only African-American on the team, but he left after 1 year. Reggie Warford was the second African-American to take a scholarship. Reggie had more of a career like I did. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't going to the NBA, so he wasn't here 1 year and gone. Reggie was here 4 years. So not only did Reggie help really integrate, and that's what I focus on with Reggie. Reggie was the second African-American to play basketball at UK, but he was the one that integrated the program. Mm. Because what Reggie did is there's this great picture we have in the documentary, and it stands out to me every time, where, of course, it's a black and white picture from the 73-74 team. It's a whole bunch of pasty white guys like me, and then there's Reggie.
I'm looking at it right now.
And Reggie's sitting there by himself, and I sit down and think, what must it have been like
Wow.
for Reggie to be? Because look, we different races, even within our country, we live with different cultures because we all have different backgrounds.
Right.
So Reggie grew up in a different culture. He grew up not only in a different culture, but a different time where segregation was just happening. And,
right.
you know, he had to walk into a school, his high school, upon the first day of integration, where it said one door said white, one door said blacks.
Wow.
And and so he's going through, or maybe it said colors, I don't know, but he's going through that. And then this is what I love about the man, because think about the guts it took for him to come to Kentucky. And look, it didn't take guts for me to go to Kentucky. It did. That was
right.
my dream.
Right.
For Reggie, it may have been his dream, but he was going to be the only African-American on the team. So he came, and then he immediately started, with Coach Hall's permission, I guess, because Coach Hall started recruiting Marion Haskins and other African-Americans. Reggie started calling on his own. It's probably NCAA violation now that I think about it, but who knows? But Reggie started calling on his own Marion Haskins and saying, dude, I got to have you here. And it wasn't, I got to have you here because you're a great player. It's, I got to have another brother on the team. And
right.
that's what Reggie says.
Right.
I got to have some, I need a partner.
Right.
And so Reggie helped integrate the program. That's the first part of the story. The second part is what he's gone through since then,
right.
which has basically been terrible, terrible health issues. He's had two heart transplants. The first one didn't take. The second one did.
Wow.
Then he had, and I'm blanking right now, either a liver transplant or a lung transplant or kidney transplant, one of the two. I should know because I've seen this documentary so many times. I'm just blanking on it. But he had another major organ transplant. He survived that. Then in the last 5 to 10 years, Leland, he got diagnosed completely separate from those transplants. They have nothing to do with what he's going through now. He got diagnosed with a disease called sarcopenia, which there is no cure for. It basically atrophies your muscles, and it's slowly killing him.
Wow.
And the best part of Reggie is as he faced being the only African-American on the Kentucky team in the 70s with a smile on his face, he's facing this part of his life with a smile on his face.
Mm.
There were great poignant moments in the documentary. And I will say I'm partial to the first two documentaries we did because I was a part of those teams, but I will tell you, I'm more proud of this documentary called Reggie Warford, Fight of His Life. And people can get it a couple ways. First and foremost, you can go to outoftheblumovie.com. So outoftheblumovie.com. You can buy either a DVD of the Reggie Warford documentary, which they're now in. I'm shipping them as we speak today. You can also go through that website to Vimeo, where all three documentaries are posted, and you can buy a digital download or a digital streaming version of the Reggie Warford documentary or any of our other two. So outofthebluemovie.com.
We need to get you on one of the streaming services, Netflix or Hulu or something where people can get your documentaries that way too.
We thought about that, and we may yet do that at some point, because we certainly can at any point in the future should any of those entities desire us. There's a lot of hoops to jump through to get that done, and we are a small, very independent documentary making company. It's really just Jason Epperson, Dick Gabriel, and myself.
Right.
And so we do everything very kind of grassroots. There's a lot of work that goes into that. But yeah, I would love to do that one day.
Well, folks can follow you on Twitter as well. It's at Cameron Mills Radio. I'm looking at your Instagram. I'm sorry. Yeah, Cameron Mills Radio on Instagram.
Right. On Twitter, it's at Cameron Radio. Cameron Radio on Twitter. Yeah. My personal Twitter is at Cameron Mills with a Z on the end instead of an S.
Yeah. It's funny. We spar back and forth on Twitter all the time, but I can't say your Twitter address. So there you go. But I bet you can't say mine, though. I bet you can't say my Twitter. What is it?
Listen, it's like phone numbers. I don't know your phone number. I just hit Leland when I call.
Yeah, I just hit it. So. Listen, thank you. It's good to talk to you again, and we'll do another episode
soon. It's nice to be back on.
It's nice to have the co-host back on the show.
Nice
to have the co-host back on the show.
All right, buddy. I love you.
All right. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you later. Cameron Mills, I am Leland Conway. Thanks again to Dynamics Productions for their help with audio, music, and more. On the Disruption Zone, many more episodes coming up.